All right, so guys, thank you for being with us today. We're excited about it. I need to take care of a little bit of housekeeping at the start of our message time. First of all, we had a big event happen last week. You guys know when the roof blew off last January, wiped out a lot of things. One of the things that got wiped out was our playground. And guys, I am happy to report that our playground became functional last week at Fellowship of the Rockies. Our teachers, our kids are excited about that. So let me just say this, guys, when everything happened, all the debris and the construction junk, and everybody was supposed to clean up after themselves, but quite frankly, the construction people did not do a good job. And so we had a bunch of people who crawled through the debris and picked out all the little bits and junk so it's a safe place for the kids. And so if you were a part of that, let me just say thank you so much. All right, a couple other things. This week, guys, is our men's retreat. We are going to go Thursday evening and Friday down to John Holman's family ranch. If you can join us, you can still sign up. The details of that about that are in the bulletin, and we're hoping you'll do it. It'll be a great time. We'll have some study time, and we'll do some guy stuff. And again, I hope that you can do that as well. We have our gathering. Which is sort of like our informational class about Fellowship of the Rockies. Gives you a background of who we are, what we're about, how you can get more connected, how we can serve you better. It's also the thing that you need to do if you're going to join the church. Last week we had a great turnout, like 15 people, 12 different people joined our church family. And so I hope that you'll do that. You have to sign up on your community card, and that's there as well. And we've been doing this for a little while. It's our a little time in the word card that we have, and here's our new time in the word. It's a chapter a day with a plan, and you can pick this up at the welcome center desk on your way out of service. Two things. All right, so Dr. Warren, the guy, he's coming back tonight. We've been talking about it a long time. He's going to be here at 4 o'clock. He's with our middle school and high school group right now. I don't know if we have any middle school, high school students, but I would encourage you to leave right now. I'll never do this ever again. But I would encourage you to leave. Robin is standing right there at the door. And she will take you to the youth group. He is a great guy. It will really help you. If you want to do that, go ahead and do it. It'll be better than listening to me. Probably the last time I will ever say that about anything in my life. Be better than listening to me. All right, guys. Thank you, Robin, for coming over anyway. All right, so one last bit of information. About 20 years ago, probably been about 20 years ago next month, I'm guessing, I made the decision that I was going to come to Colorado, and we were going to start a church, and I made an announcement about it, and a friend of mine back in Texas had said, I want to have lunch with you, and this individual has been the singular individual that has been most encouraging to me and to Fellowship of the Rockies, and today is his first time with us in Colorado Springs. 20 years later, he's been such a big deal. Larry, you're going to kill me. I know you are. Hey, buddy, I want you to stand up. You and Linda, come on. You guys stand up. And let's thank them. And if you stop being my friend, that was a bad decision. But if I asked you, you wouldn't let me do it, and you mean so much to me. Thank you. Guys, what we're doing here today, both services at the other campus, that isn't possible without the senders. And so, Larry, thank you for being our sender, okay? All right, so we got a lot to cover today. We're going to jump right into it. Hebrews chapter 13. Is our foundational passage for the series. And it's this: now may the God of peace equip you with everything good for doing his will, and may he work in us what is pleasing to him through Jesus Christ. Our series key truth is God desires to equip you with everything you need as you believe, know, trust, and go. Last week was believe, this week is know. And each one of these steps build on one another and are connected. They're all interconnected throughout the whole series. And so today, right at the start, I want to spend a little bit of time talking about the direct connection between believe and know, or belief and knowledge. We all know that every journey to faith in Christ is unique. We all know that. But I think we can take all these unique journeys and bottle them into what I would call two camps, okay? And the camp over here is going to be what I would call the inspirational, emotional camp. There's a high emotional an inspirational component to someone accepting Christ. In the camp over here, I'm going to call it the rational, informational camp. And there's a lot of rational thought process and information that requires belief. Now, I'm clearly over here in this camp. I've told you a bunch of times, didn't grow up going to church. We didn't have that as part of our background, but my grandfather became a believer in Jesus Christ when he was 68 years old. And one of the first things he started doing was dragging my tail to church. And shortly after I started going to church for the first time as a freshman in high school, they had a youth event, a youth rally. And it was this big thing, and there was tons of kids there, and it was loud music and lots of energy, and they had a speaker. And at the end of the message, the speaker said, "Hey, if you want to go to heaven when you die, raise your hand." And I thought that was a no-brainer. No, sign me up for the hell bus, right? So I raised my hand, right? And he suckered me. And he said, "Okay, if your hand's up, now stand up and come forward." And if I would have known I wouldn't have done it probably. But he said, so I walked down there, I get to the front, and there's a guy who goes to that church still. I still know Denny Dobson. And Denny Dobson took the Bible and for the first time showed me in the Bible how Jesus Christ died for me and my sins. And if I would ask for forgiveness and believe in him, I would become a believer in Jesus Christ. So even though it was mainly inspirational and emotional, there was that knowledge piece that went with it. Okay, over here in this camp, I think a good example of this camp is Jim Brummett, my friend sitting right there. Now, Jim is not like me. He's methodical, he's smart, he's reasoned, he's disciplined. I mean, he's the exact opposite of me. And I've heard him tell this story a bunch of times. And in his journey to belief in Jesus Christ was much more rational, and he had to go through a process, and he had to check some boxes, but yet there was still that emotional component because you were going through some stuff in your life, right? They tie together. This is the point as we jump into know. It doesn't matter if your journey to faith in Jesus Christ was more inspirational or informational. After you believe, God wants you to know without a shadow of a doubt that he is real and the Bible is true. He wants you to know he is real and the Bible is true. And so today we see in this, there's a passage of scripture in 1 John, in chapter 5, verses 19 and 20, how it puts this knowledge component and this understanding component all together with belief, and it does it so well. Let me read it to you. It says, "We know that we are children of God, and that the whole world is under the control of the evil one. We know also that the Son of God has come and has given us understanding so that we may know him who is true. And we are in him who is true by being in his Son, Jesus Christ. He is true. He is the true God and eternal life. So the key truth for today is this. God not only wants you to believe, but to know that your faith is rational. He wants you to know that your faith is rational. And guys, and when we know, when we know some things, when we have information, it helps us accomplish a couple things. And the first thing it does is it helps us answer the criticism. It's clear that there are many people who are critical about God and against Christianity. I mean, they're just critics of the whole thing. And if we are going to respond to them, if we're going to answer them, if we're going to make a difference, we have to have solid information to be able to respond. We have to have solid information to help us respond. And God actually says we need more than information, but we need to present that information in a clear and in a good way. 1 Peter 3:15 talks about that. It says, always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks you to give the reason, intelligence, for the hope that you have, but do this with gentleness and respect. And that just take a, I can't spend a lot of time on this. I can spend all day on it, but let me just say this to start. We have all seen debates, right? And I'm not just talking between Christians and atheists, but we've all seen debates. And oftentimes in the debate process, the one person doing the debate, their goal is to make the other one look like an idiot, right? And they just beat them, and there's a whole lot of condemnation about their thought process. Well, I think what that does is rally the base of the position. The people that are firmly in that base camp, they like that. But the people who are genuine seekers or in the middle, that doesn't go well for them. That's not what they appreciate. What they appreciate is a well thought out, presented rationale in a reasonable tone. And that's why God says, hey, you give a reason. You get the information, but you present that reason with gentleness and respect. So knowing helps us answer the criticism. But knowing also requires information. That's really what today at Fellowship of the Rockies is all about. Dr. Warren's with us. He's actually in the youth group right now, the middle school, high school group. And he's spending a lot of time with them today talking about this stuff. And then tonight he's going to be back here. This afternoon at 4 o'clock he's going to be back here. And he's just going to answer questions. Things you've heard. Help bring clarity to some of the things you're going to hear today. And I really believe it'll be a great time. I hope you can come. We have childcare. You didn't have to sign up for it. We've planned. It's all taken care of. You just show up. Children third grade and under or childcare, we recommend fourth grade and up kids come into the room. And they hear this stuff because this is where they're starting to be confronted with what we believe, what I believe are lies. So we're going to talk about that, and then after we're done, we'll talk for an hour or so, and then we'll have some food together and hang out. So hope you'll come back at 4. So Dr. Warren couldn't be at two places at one time. He couldn't be here and at Fountain. We couldn't put everybody together for one place at time each place. So what I did is this summer I went down to Louisiana College and we videoed him talking about some of this information. So let's do the first video clip right now, guys. Hello, Fellowship of the Rockies. I'm here today with Dr. Wade Warren. He's a professor of biology at Louisiana College, and I'm super excited to have you with our church family today because I believe God has equipped us with everything we need to do his work as we know that our faith is rational. And today we're talking about our faith is rational, and you are a scientist, and you're going to talk about some of that stuff. So tell us a little bit about who you are.
Well, I did my PhD work, my doctoral training at Texas A&M University, where I worked
in Giga Maggie's.
Exactly. Yeah. I worked there in a lab that was particularly interested in neurobiology and circadian rhythms, and so that's my research background. Yeah. I have been on faculty here at Louisiana College for 21 years, starting my 22nd year this fall.
And one of the things that I was just totally blown away by as you sent me some of your lectures is that in the world of science today, there are scientists, not all of them even believers, that they're looking at some things and they're coming to different conclusions. In fact, you sent this document as part of your class, and it's a scientific dissent from Darwinianism. We are skeptical of the claims for the ability of random mutation and natural selection to account for the complexity of life. And guys, 23 pages, small font, single space, you're one of these people, almost 1,000 scientists from the most highly esteemed places in America, Berkeley, Harvard, all over. Why are you saying this, and what's the importance of that?
Yeah, so it's a unique situation for somebody like me who has a science background. Mm-hmm. I like to be upfront with people that I'm a believer. Mm-hmm. I'm a Christian who also loves science, and sometimes that puts people off, and they're not willing to listen to the arguments from science that I have to make because they say my opinion is biased. And so to that I would respond, listen to the science and evaluate for yourself. I think this is particularly important today because, especially for the young people that I'm around, they need to know the whole story, and there is certainly an element in the area of Darwinism that would suggest that this philosophy gives a person the right not to believe there is a God at all. And so I think the data has become so overwhelming at this point that it's really no longer legitimate for a person to use the Darwinian model as an excuse for not believing that there is a creator. And so that's the part that, as a believer and a scientist, that's the part that really motivates me, and I love the opportunity to talk to people about it.
So I think what you're saying is there's a bunch of really smart people.
Yeah, much smarter than me, or
yeah.
You.
Yeah, that's obvious, okay? The me part, obvious. But they're starting to have some questions, and then we're beginning to see that the science is actually giving us some pretty cool evidence of the fact that they're may in fact be a God.
Yeah, absolutely. It's striking. The beauty is in the details. Mm. And so I'd like to show you some of that.
Yeah, let's go to your classroom and you can share some of this really cool stuff with us. Thank you. So before we jump into the actual evidence and the science behind it, let me just look at another scripture. Because what we're beginning to see as we look at science, hard scientific evidence, is that science is beginning to scream the truth of Psalm 139. A few weeks ago, Randy, he actually spoke in his message on the greater passage, but in Psalm 139, verse 13, it says this, "For you created my inmost being. You knit me together in my mother's womb. Your eyes saw my unformed body." Okay, let's look at the first science piece that really talks about that. Let's go, guys. So, Dr. Warren, as I was able to listen to the lectures you sent me, I was fascinated by the scientific evidence that helps us know that our faith is rational. One of the things that was just so cool was Dr. Collins' work on the human genome, and you did a great job with that. It's fun being in your classroom today. Why don't you talk about that just a little bit?
Yeah, so Francis Collins is the current head of the NIH, the National Institutes of Health.
And that's probably a big deal, isn't it?
He's a very important guy.
Yeah.
He's also a self-proclaimed evangelical evolutionary biologist.
Okay.
He's very interesting. Huh. He was part of the, he was the head of the project from the government end, completing the human genome, which was completed around the turn of the millennium. And on stage, when he introduced the completion of this project to the president of the nation, he said, "Mr. President, we have discovered the language of God."
Wow.
And that really, took many of us in the scientific community. It was something that got our attention.
Hmm.
So he wrote a book as a result of this called The Language of God. And in it, he opens the book in talking about the details of what he means, that we've discovered the language of God. And given enough time, I love to unwind this for students so that they can see it. I'll apologize to you. It does require that you know a little detail about science.
Okay.
But I can introduce it to you at least.
Yeah, please do.
It's kind of what we're saying. So grab the board there.
Okay, all right.
This is just some English letters here, and they don't really make any sense. Ergolodo. Now, that's not really language to us, yes? It's not really words. We don't speak to one another this way, so it's not really language. Okay, but that's not really what Francis Collins meant when he said language. He meant real things. And what he was talking about is the letters that are in the DNA molecule. Now, I'm going to rearrange these letters so you can see what I mean. It's a very simplistic illustration,
okay.
But it sort of gets people started in their thinking. And then we'll look at the DNA molecule.
Okay, all right.
Okay, so I can show you what I mean by this, all right? So I'm going to do this in improper English because this is the way we talk in Louisiana.
Okay, all right.
And it also reminds me of what we want to do when we finish here.
Okay,
yes?
All right.
Okay, talk about Louisiana food. Because Louisiana food is, in fact, don't get ahead of me.
Okay.
Louisiana food is, in fact, not really good. You would say this in the vernacular, right? It's real good.
Oh, that's good.
Okay,
yeah.
So this is language that we can understand. Okay, so for the illustration, let's pretend like these letters are actually letters in our cells, a language, if you were.
Okay.
So put that down. I'm going to show you an example on this next picture. This is a very small section of DNA. DNA in our cells actually has letters that you can see. These letters are A, G, T, and C all along through here. And there are 3 billion of them.
That's a lot.
In a single DNA strand.
In one DNA strand.
In one DNA strand, yeah, in a single cell. So it's a huge molecule. This is a very small piece just for illustration purposes. Now, this is the picture that I use in my classes to teach how the DNA gives the cell instructions on how to make proteins. Now, in our bodies, proteins run the show.
Okay.
They do everything.
Yeah.
But the DNA has to be there to tell the cell how to make the proteins. And proteins, you can see, are being made down here. These are amino acids being put together in a chain to make a protein. What Collins noticed, what he pointed out in his book, and has had quite an important impact on the scientific community, is the letters here are actually a coded language that the cell can understand. This is not gibberish. And if the letters here in the DNA molecule are not in the right place, for example, if this T were a G or a C or an A, you've got major problems. So in our cells, for example, in the protein that carries oxygen around our bodies, a single letter is out of place in one of the strands, and that results in sickle cell anemia.
That's bad.
That's bad. So it's a point mutation. Okay, so the order of the letters is very important. The order of the letters matters, and it is the language that the cell can understand. Now, it's important for it to be in the right order. I get that. But here's the clincher.
Okay.
The letters in their order are attached to the backbone non-specifically. That is, this particular sugar molecule here doesn't care whether a T or a C or a G or an A goes here. It doesn't care. Any of those letters can go here as far as the cell is concerned. There's no biochemical explanation for why there's a T there. So Colin says, somebody wrote this language.
Somebody told the T to go right there.
Somebody told the T where to go.
Yeah.
That's right. This is language for the cell. And this is that sort of the base of life here, where you are building cells and building function within cells. It matters the order of the letters. Now, some scientists, like Francis Crick, who was the Nobel Prize-winning scientist discovering the helix of the DNA, the double helix molecule, have taken this and said, well, I understand what you're saying, but I'm not going to accept the fact that God, a creator, did this. Instead, he developed this idea that aliens wrote this language. So a lot of times, people smirk when they see this, students, I'm getting grins on their faces, but he's a legit scientist.
Yeah.
And this is an insurmountable problem.
Yeah.
For somebody who's going to suggest there is no creator.
So what science is seemingly declaring to us is that somebody designed every part of our body.
Yes.
Somebody created us. And so when we read Genesis 1, and it talks about God. Science is telling us that we can know that is very rational today.
It is very rational from a purely scientific perspective.
Yeah.
Somebody wrote this.
Yeah, thank you. I really appreciate it. And I really look forward to what you're going to say to us tonight as you have this conversation. Help us understand this further. Thanks, Dr. Warren.
Yep.
So you've heard the phrase, the devil is in the details, right? Well, science is actually declaring the devil isn't in the details, God is in the details. In the very essence, in the very foundation, the smallest part of our existence, we see God's handiwork there. Now, in scientists, again, I love that deal when he talked about the guy who discovered the double helix, Francis Crick. He's not about God. He thinks aliens is a better solution than God. But as he looks at the science, he's saying, man, evolution, natural selection, random mutation, that does not work. Do this with me. Let's look at that Hebrews. Let's look at the Psalm verse again one more time, and let's read that Psalm passage together before we look at the next segment. Okay, let's read it together. Okay, for you created my inmost being, you knit me together in my mother's womb. Your eyes saw my unformed body. Okay, let's watch the next segment on the eye with that in mind. So, Dr. Warren, now that we understand this DNA structure and everything is in language and telling us what to do, that language helps the body to function properly. And now we're starting to get a glimpse of how things work. And if the language isn't correct, then we don't see. What I learned from you was when Darwin was around, he knew about the anatomy of the eye, but he didn't know anything about the biochemistry of seeing. So why don't you talk to us a little bit about that?
Yeah, and your point is a good one. As I've said many times before, I think and many others have said this as well, if Charles Darwin was an honest scientist, and I think if he knew what we know today, that he wouldn't have published on the Origin of Species.
Yeah.
Now that's conjecture, but this is cool.
Yeah.
So this is a side view of an eye, and you can see the various structures of the eye here. And what Darwin did is he used this eye and he compared it to other animals. Animals that in evolutionary biology we would call simpler animals that had simpler forms of this eye. And he was well aware of the complexity of the eye. And he even brought it up in his book as a problem. But he suggested that, look, we have simple to complex eyes.
Oh.
The complex eyes evolve from the simple ones. It makes beautiful sense.
Yeah.
The problem is he did not know about the biochemistry of the eye. Now, this shows the biochemistry that I teach my students. And you can see a number of different proteins. I've whittled this down to 5 steps, which is, depending on which biochemistry text you read, something in the neighborhood of 18 to maybe 30 different steps. But the point here is to show you the complexity of systems like visual systems. And there are literally thousands of these within the human body. This is just one of examples all over the place. So what you can see here is, in science jargon, a system of 5 steps. These steps consist of molecules, proteins that interact with one another in sequence. They have to interact with each other in the proper order in order for us to see. We now know that at the end of this, you got to do something to this protein over here. You have to stop the sodium movement through that protein or we don't get to see. That's when you say, what is vision? You say, well, that's light hitting your retina. Well, not really, because the light that hits the retina has got to initiate a sequence of steps, each requiring different proteins interacting with each other in order for us to see. Now, if you come along and harm or damage by whatever, genetic mutation or whatever, you damage one of these steps, you don't get an organism that sees less. You get blindness. And so in a Darwinian model, what you've got to do is you've got to construct, in a Darwinian model, a simpler form that would then evolve into a more complex form. The problem here is all of these things have to be in place for it to happen the first time. So next layer of design, I would say.
Yeah, and so really, again, as we learn more in the science realm, we are assured that our faith, we get to know that our faith is rational. Somebody created this.
Right.
It didn't just happen.
It's very difficult to make the case that this happened by natural selection.
Oh, that's great. Thanks. So, by the way, guys, I forgot to mention earlier that the descent from Darwin list, Darwinianism list, 1,000 scientists around the globe on the table out in the Welcome Center, there's a little card. It's got the information about how you can download this and get this list if you're interested in it. So the eye has always been, the human eye has always been a challenge in the evolutionary model or theory of evolution. And I'm guessing it's 10 years or so ago now. I was teaching on Genesis, and you know, Genesis 1 talks about creation. And so I'm not a scientist, don't want to be a scientist, all that stuff, but I understand there are scientists talking about evolution. So I approached a high school biology teacher and I said, hey, do you believe in evolution? And he said, well, I'm a biology teacher, of course I believe in evolution. And I said, hey, can I buy you lunch one day and you just help me understand the evolutionary process model better? And he said, I don't do that. I don't get into it. I don't want to debate it. It causes arguments. I'm just not the guy. I said, well, what would you recommend me reading so that I could understand? And he said, okay, I would recommend you reading Richard Dawkins' book, The Blind Watchmaker. And the title is The Blind Watchmaker, Why the Evidence of Evolution Reveals a Universe Without Design. Now, let's just be clear. Richard Dawkins is no more of a scientist than I am a scientist. He's a philosopher, he's an atheist, but he has become the trumpeter of atheism and evolution because he believes evolution proves that there is no God. His point isn't, he's not trying to prove the science, he's just trying to show that there is no God because that's what's most important to him. And in his book, he has a chapter on the eye, chapter 4, on the eye. And this is how he addresses the problem with the eye. And I chopped up, and these are his words. I want you to hear his words. This is not Stu saying what he said. This is what he says. And he asks and answers some questions. Okay, and the first question, his words, could the human eye have arisen directly from no eye at all in a single step? Second question is, could the human eye have arisen directly from something slightly different from himself, something that we may call X? Again, his words. The answer to question one is clearly and decisive no. The answer to question two is equally clearly yes, provided only that the difference between the modern eye and its immediate predecessor is sufficiently small. If you have a mental picture of X, you find it implausible that the human eye could have risen directly from it, this simply means that you have chosen the wrong X. Make your mental picture of X progressively more like the human eye until you find an X that you do find plausible as an immediate predecessor to the human eye. You come up with something that makes sense to you, and then it'll make it true. Oh. Third, and this is back to him. Third question. Is there a continuous series of X's connecting the modern human eye to a state with no eye at all? It seems to me clear that the answer has to be yes, provided only that we allow ourselves a sufficiently large series of X's. You might feel that 1,000 X's is ample, but if you need more steps to make the total transition plausible in your mind, simply allow yourself to assume 10,000 X's. And if 10,000 is not enough for you, allow yourself 100,000 and so on. Give me one of those 100,000 X's. But they're not there. They're not there. Yeah, okay. Guys, I am not saying we need to be scientists or that Christianity is a science movement. Let me say that. I'm not saying that Christianity is a science movement. There's faith involved in it, but there is scientific evidence giving us justification for our faith. Science is supposed to be science. And what Dawkins just read is way more of a leap of faith, a blind leap of faith, than anything in Christianity is right now. So this is the point, friends. We get to choose. We get to choose. We can choose to believe in a series of hypothetic X's that are not known in any way, shape, or form, and that's the reason for everything. Or we can choose that the God of the universe, created us and hardwired into us at the very smallest level of our microbiology coding that makes everything work. We get to choose that. And then, if you happen to make the choice like I did and jump in the God camp instead of the random X or the alien camp, but if you choose to jump in the God camp with me, we should all scream the truth of the verse that I purposely skipped in Psalm 139. And that verse is, I praise you because I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Your works are wonderful. I know that full well. So this is what we're going to do. We're going to, like last week, we're going to end praising the amazing name of God. We're going to end declaring praise to God because he is the one who made us. He is the one that created us. He is the one that knit us together in our mother's womb. And now, more than any other time in the history of humanity, the scientific evidence is screaming that reality.